welcome to Emirati Stories, a podcast that will give you a chance to discover the Emirati society and culture through individual stories. I am Nathalie Gillet, and this is the very first episode of the show. I'm very excited about it, and I hope you will enjoy it too. To open this series today, I have chosen a very talented young Emirati woman from Dubai. She's in her 30s, juggling between professional activities and passions. She's first of all an artist, and you may have met her if you've had a chance to visit her pink bedroom installation at the Abu Dhabi Art Fair in November. She's also a designer, an entrepreneur. She runs her own fashion design business. She's a women's advocate and an active campaigner for breast cancer awareness. She will also speak about her experience as the vice president for corporate affairs of a large Abu Dhabi company. I'm very pleased to welcome today Leila El-Marashi, the first guest of Emirati Stories. Leila, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Nathalie. Thank you for having me. I'm very honored to be the first Emirati on your show, and I hope your listeners will find the content quite interesting.
So to begin with, which one of these elements I've mentioned in my introduction plays the largest role in your life?
So that's a good question. I think my time now is divided between my day job, which is in Abu Dhabi, and I'm from Dubai, so managing my time and being between Dubai and Abu Dhabi can be a little hectic. I've always been in corporate communications professionally and always in the energy industry. So I've been quite lucky. I have access to information your average person wouldn't, such as the geopolitical climate, oil and gas information, sustainability, which is very important to me. CSR has been something I've always worked closely with. And I guess that's what gave me the right tools to ensure my Power of Pink project was successfully launched, because I used a lot of my stakeholder mapping skills, a lot of my communication skills, planning, the event management side of it, the marketing side of it, understanding the power of social media and digital media to help tell the story.
The Power of Pink being the name of the project that you showed at the Abu Dhabi Art Fair. And that leads me to another big part of your life, which is art. Can you explain what this project is about? And can you first describe it for our audience?
Okay, so The Power of Pink is a real labor of love. It's a personal initiative that I wanted to take on about, I would say, a year and a half ago. I started obsessing with the color pink because I saw this art piece in London on someone's social media account, a friend of mine, and I said, "Oh, what is this?" And the color got me thinking a lot. And somehow, through some sort of strange coincidence, it just started touching on very important subjects in my life. And I wanted to communicate that in a structured way to an audience through an art installation in the shape of a bedroom that was an interactive timeline where each wall in the room would be telling a story of a decade of my life, but in a macro level, your life as well as a woman. So it touches on a number of topics that are important, I think. Women empowerment, consumerism, the power of marketing through just a color, how much that shapes us. And then breast cancer and the fact that breast cancer is a pink ribbon. Yeah. So it's a community project. I don't feel it belongs to me solely. I feel this is something I want to give back to the universe. Because I went through a very profound experience and I felt it was important to get to share this in a positive way and give a positive message. And if I were to sum up the message in one sentence, it would be, when things get heavy, put pink on it.
Right. It's a very personal project indeed, and each of the three walls were showing items that really belong to you. And by the way, I will post pictures of the installation in the show notes, so you can go to emiratistories.com and look at them later. So Leila, how important and present was pink in your own life?
Very present, actually very present. And that's why I'm kind of making fun of myself in a creative way. For me, I mean, as a child growing up, I had an obsession with Barbies. Even though I was a tomboy, I was quite active and I was playing outdoors a lot, you know, getting bruises on my knee and learning how to ride a bicycle. But it was really interesting how attracted I was to pink aisles in toy shops.
How do you explain this?
I don't understand. I mean, I remember how much I would nag and beg my nanny and my mother and my family and everybody who had access to cash to get me a Barbie doll every week. So it was a big addiction on my side. And I remember I was playing with Barbie dolls until the age of 9, which is late for a girl.
It's very interesting because Barbie, from the outside, you would think that Barbie is at the complete opposite of the Emirati world and lifestyle. And how does a little girl reconcile both in her life?
I don't know. I just remember, you know, being in Dubai and it being a very small town. And I was friends with the neighbors and I had my cousins and life was very simple. You would go to the country club to swim, go to school, watch cartoons only from a certain period of time because that's when the TV would operate, which was from, I don't know, 11 to 2 p.m. And then have your dinner. And even dinner was limited. There was alphabet soup. So it was quite interesting. Everything was very simple. There weren't a lot of choices in those days. And Barbie for me was the epitome of what a woman had to be. I remember only finding blonde women beautiful. Even my sister, when she would go to school and she had a blonde female friend, I would find that to be some sort of golden goddess or something. It was very interesting how brainwashed I was by that and by the marketing put into Barbie. So I would play with Barbie and Ken and I would have all these role playing and invite my friends to play with me, but they had to play in a right, correct way.
Did you sometimes try to make Barbie fit your world? For instance, dress her in an abaya or something like that?
I think at that point in my life, it was the 80s. Mm. And life was quite liberal then. My parents were very liberal. My mother wasn't covered. When we'd go to family parties, nobody was covered yet. It came later.
In the 90s,
it came. I think the Arab culture was more liberal before a certain period. After the Gulf War, people got a little more conservative and religious. Mm. So it was like trending. I remember once I was hitting puberty, that's when I got introduced to the abaya and all that. As a child, I had no idea what anyone was talking about.
Mm. So are you saying that women were not wearing the abaya at that time?
Nobody I knew.
Okay.
Even in the family pictures. Mm. Yeah.
So I know you've reflected and researched on the popularity of pink, which actually has a story behind it. You said it wasn't always a gender differentiator. What have you found, Leila El-Marashi?
It's very interesting. So if we look at the color pink and we ask ourselves, why pink? Why was pink chosen for girls? Nobody actually stops and asks that because for us, it's something we just take by default as a given. We feel it's always been the case forever. Actually, no. It only started in the 1930s because in the US, they wanted people to move away from the colors of World War II, which were gray and black. So they started this whole marketing campaign nationwide that pink was for girls, just so to encourage women to shop more, to buy certain products. So it's a big marketing scam. And then Eisenhower's wife would wear pink suits because she felt it was flattering. And that's how pink became so favorable. So it's a very new epidemic. It started less than 90 years ago. And it's affected a few generations. For sure, I'm a victim of it.
Now, how present and relevant is pink for grown-up women? What do you think?
In your childhood, you're very much in this bubble. So this whole wall is dedicated to a girl's childhood with relation to how she looks at life and how it's all a fairy tale. And I'm not saying that's necessarily positive or negative. I'm saying it shapes a lot of her character later, depending on how she takes it. So for me, it was that I believe in happy endings and there was always true love around the corner. So I love this wall. I love this wall because it's full of hope and dreams. And you don't know what's going to happen after. You have no idea whether you're good looking, what family you come from, what you belong to, what you don't belong to, what your values are. You really don't know. I'm sorry, nobody knows before the age of 10 who they really are. And your mother is your world, you know. And my mother was definitely for me a huge, important power figure when I was a child, because A, she was very glamorous and beautiful, and she had her friends, and I would just like listen to everything she said. And I remember when I was 4 years old, I used to stick to her side when she'd be with her friends and not say anything, and then whisper in her ear, "I don't like what your friend is wearing." So yeah, back to your question. Sorry, I digress. Yeah. The second wall for me was the second decade of my life, which was going through puberty and becoming a woman. And this is the womanhood, or I would like to call this wall your glory years, your prime. And if you look at sanitary napkins, your puberty, they're all pink. If you look at, you know, you're most likely to have had your first pink bra from brands like Marks and Spencer, Victoria's Secret, or whatever was the popular brand in your hometown. And this is the age where you're quite confused because you're growing really fast physically, but your brain is still that of a young girl, and you're trying to catch up with the world to understand whether, for example, you have a nice smile, nice teeth, good skin, if you're good looking or not, how you're doing in school, how you are benchmarked against your peers. You have more than one teacher now. It's not your mom who's your world anymore. It's kind of your friends. And I remember, you know, going through that, I remember being very close to my school friends and wanting to be with them. And the way you shop, you know, you buy all these trendy little products, lip glosses and whatever you're allowed to get away with, the magazines you're introduced to. I remember 17 was a very popular magazine. My mom would be like, "You're not 17. Why are you reading these magazines?" And it was amazing because I was so fascinated with all this pop culture. And then you listen to boy bands and, you know, you're growing up, you're becoming a young lady. And I think here's the time where people start to give you advice. So your parents start to explain to you that, you know, you need to become a lady and act ladylike, and what are you going to be when you grow up, and how do you want to... And then your character starts to shape. And you cannot be as, let's say, rebellious as a child as you are now, you know. You need to follow a certain protocol. And for me, it was very interesting because I had to start to cover up and wear the shela and maybe do less sports. And it was difficult. It was a difficult adjustment to embrace the femininity that was coming my way. And then you start to make it in the corporate world. So you slowly shy away from the color pink because you want people to take you more seriously. And you'll come home to your pink mug or your pink slippers or your pink bathrobe because you still feel an affiliation with the color, even though you're a little more secretive about it now.
How was the reaction of the public, by the
Excellent.
Way?
Excellent. Yeah, people were very emotional, very touched.
I remember little girls being literally glued to this room. They were acting like it's their home, spending time on the pink bed, reading
and
the pink book.
And teenagers glued to the mirror and trying on the lipsticks and perfumes and, leaving me notes. And people wrote on the glass, "I hope cancer gets cancer." It was very interesting. Very interesting.
Yes, because the project is not just about the color pink and women. It's also linked to your personal experience with your mother, who passed away. Has a deeper meaning.
It does have a deeper meaning, but I wanted it to be lightly shared, and I wanted it to be a build-up. So the storyline is supposed to look at one person's entire life. And for me, the third wall, I think, is the most, you could say, intense wall of the project because it touches on a subject that a lot of people are experiencing in their life, and that's breast cancer. So for me, usually in your 30s and 40s, you're most likely to experience breast cancer through someone you love or even through yourself. And that's where you're at risk of the illness. And a lot of people don't know why this is happening. They have a lot of emotions and psychological trauma because of that. And I think it's very important to create platforms or try to create sort of doors, open doors for people to be able to express what they're dealing with and know who to go to for what. So to know what the treatments are, what does it mean to have breast cancer, How does it impact us? Is it genetic? So I got to understand a lot about the disease through a personal journey I went through, which was that 2 years ago I lost my mother to breast cancer. And I internalized it. I didn't want to mope or mourn or make it a sad, depressing experience or complain to people around me. And they would have lovingly supported me and been there for me. But I didn't want that. I didn't want it to be heavy. And certainly not appear weak in front of my father or my siblings. So I wanted to make it a positive experience. And I didn't share it much before the Pink Project until now. So it wasn't easy, I think, because I didn't expect the project to expose me so much. I'm quite a private person, so to share so much detail about my life or about my mother was not easy for me. It was not easy to put the project together, to frame the notes and messages from her. It was quite hard.
Hard, and yet you did it.
I did it, yeah. It was important.
That it was important to you.
Very important to me. And I think I knew it was something that would have made her very proud. And even family members were quite touched because they got to celebrate her again in a way which wasn't... it was very creative. It showcased a side of her I wanted to share with the world and celebrate, which was how positive and creative and courageous she was going through the illness.
Would that be the link with the Pink universe?
Yes, because for me, I shared with the world how I saw it, how I remembered, how I experienced, which was pink is the color of love. It's used a lot in everything a woman goes through. All the important milestones a woman experiences, pink is there in the background offering its support. Whether you're wrapped in pink as a baby, whether you're gifted pink toys, whether you go through puberty to become a woman, whether you go through breast cancer, they're all pink.
Pink ribbon.
Yeah, it's a pink ribbon. It's a campaign Estée Lauder won in the 80s. Initially, they wanted it to be peach, but then they chose pink because they said pink gives you hope. And I think it does give you hope. And I think my message is a hopeful message. So this wall invites cancer partners to be involved. In this case, it was Rahma, which is a cancer institution in Abu Dhabi that provides free care, free mammograms, free chemotherapy. And what they're doing is amazing. So we linked up with them to have their messaging on this wall and a video about them. And what we're doing is encouraging people to be very aware, not to be afraid, to go for tests, not to be afraid of being diagnosed, not to be afraid of what stage they're in. To give them strength. And I think it's very important. We shouldn't underestimate how much support we need from each other.
And the email address of Rahma's organization is rahmacancercare.com. Again, you can find the details in the show notes on emiratistories.com. So, Leila, do you think there is a lack of awareness about breast cancer?
Yeah, I think there's not enough awareness. I'm a perfect example of that. I knew nothing about it. I wasn't interested. It was for me a bit creepy. I didn't know how it could affect someone's life so much. I didn't know how much the families of the cancer victim would be impacted. And to see people deteriorate from it, and the chemotherapy is not a joke or walk in the park. And the hospitals are sometimes not fully equipped because there's a lot of pain management in it as well. A lot of patients, a lot of confusion about test results and progress and remission or not remission, all of that. So I don't feel sorry for myself going through it. I think it happened for a reason. I'd like it to be empowering, not limiting.
In one of your social media posts that struck me, speaking about the 5-year battle of your mother against the disease, you said that it was a long but beautiful journey. Beautiful journey is not what I would imagine of such a painful experience of cancer, death. Why did you call it that way?
Because it's interesting. I mean, you know, every daughter and mother have a turbulent or, let's say, interesting relationship. And my relationship with my mother in the beginning, if I remember, it was quite challenging because I was very rebellious. I didn't want to listen to her. We always argued. She wanted me to be a certain way. I didn't want to be a certain way. In the end, we just gave up and loved each other the way we both were. That's why it was beautiful, because we realized what counted and we made the most of the time we had. And it was very healing. And I'm quite blessed because I got to appreciate her for who she was, take from her what she was trying to pass on to me. And I think you tend to take your loved ones for granted, and sometimes you feel, why, you know, there was all this wasted time or all this sorrow or guilt or unspoken issues or not saying goodbye properly. And I feel blessed I had these 5 years with her, because I felt we were able to focus on what mattered. And what mattered was making most of the time we had. And it just became about me servicing her to make her as comfortable as possible and to make her feel safe. And that's why it was beautiful, because you start to understand it's not about you. It's not about, you know, having your parents there when you need them. At some point, they need you. And you need to wake up and realize that servicing them or serving them is sometimes a gift, because it's very humbling. And the other reason it was beautiful is because of the way she went through the illness was very gracious and elegant and courageous. She never complained. She was very joyful. She was always kind, always smiling, always helping people. And how can you not celebrate someone like that, you know?
I still want your push and I want your shove, all wrapped up in the skin of love. Reaching out to adore the sun.
You're listening to Emirati Stories, and my guest today is the artist Leila El-Marashi.
Fear the old man till he lost his mind. You know why. The slow slide out is his own unkind. So she sits in a chair to the dead of night. She won't drink or move, cause it don't feel right. He said living without you would hurt me, but it doesn't feel like anything at all. He said living without you would hurt me, but it doesn't feel like anything at all. He said living without you would hurt me, but it doesn't feel like anything at all. They said living without you would hurt me, but it doesn't feel like anything at all.
Leila, can you tell me more about your mother? Najah was her name.
Najah, yeah.
Who was she? What was her character? What was her life? Can you explain to us?
It's a very interesting story. So my mother actually is originally Iraqi, and her mother was Lebanese, and my parents met in Iraq when my father was studying medicine in Baghdad.
And your father is Emirati?
Yes, he's Emirati.
From Dubai?
From Dubai. And he basically fell in love with her. She was very beautiful, but he was much older. He was 18 years older, so she didn't want him in the beginning. And he was friends with her father. So she was only 17. So she hadn't even gone to college yet. And she had a tough life. She lost her Lebanese mother when she was 8. I don't exactly know what the reason was, but it was a love marriage between my grandfather and my grandmother. And it was a big issue in the family because she was Christian, Lebanese, and he was from this Iraqi conservative family. So his parents were quite against it. They boycotted him in the beginning. They had 4 wonderful children. The second one was my mother. So she passed away when my mother was 8, and I don't think they did a very good job explaining it to this 8-year-old. So it was very hard for her. And then my grandfather remarried, so she had a stepmother who also passed away when my mother was 16. And this woman was, I would say, my mother's maternal figure. So she taught my mom everything, and she was a real lady. She had 3 children of her own, and she really loved them, and she was, like, wonderful from what I hear. So it was quite hard. She was preparing something in the kitchen and she caught fire. So she died in a horrible way. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was very hard for my mom. Very traumatic. And, you know, she kind of died in my mom's arms, and she told her, please, can you take care of my children? Her youngest was 6 months and her eldest was 6 years old, which in a way brought my mother very close to her six brothers and sisters. There was seven in total. So four girls and three boys. I brought them very close together, very, very close until today. And then my grandfather remarried a third lady who had no children. She was kind of, they would describe her as the mean stepmom who just wanted the girls to get married quite quickly. So it was hard for my mom, I think, going through all these experiences. And she was kind of pushed into a marriage quite early, even though my father was wonderful and she eventually was able to open her heart and fall in love with him. In the beginning, it was quite hard. She wasn't ready for it, you know. She moved to Dubai. So imagine moving to Dubai, being forced into a marriage at 17. And she was very rebellious.
Was the life very different between the two countries?
Very. So Iraq at the time was much more developed. Dubai was still the desert, you know. And she's like, why would anyone come live here? And look at Dubai now, you know. So she was the wife of a doctor, and he was very good to her. She lived a good life. She had many friends. And then she had my sister, and then me, and then my brother. She was allowed to travel when she wanted. My father was very, very generous, very kind, very patient, wonderful to be with. And then, yeah, she was diagnosed 7 years ago with breast cancer. She was quite young, in her 50s. She was a wonderful mom, very sweet, always there for us. She always wanted to be a very good mother because she didn't have one. And she was very encouraging about education. She never enforced me to get married too soon. Hence, I'm still single. She was very proud of what I had achieved and how far I'd come. She was very protective. Lots of fun to be with. Always in a good mood. Energetic. She loved life. She loved to go out. She loved to shop. So that was my mom. She got a little more religious after her 30s and 40s and 50s. Like, she just started to want to understand more about who she was and where she came from and why she was here. So very spiritual. And I wasn't yet ready for that. So it took me a while to accept that and then understand why it was so important for her. Lots of things didn't make any sense to me till, because you're a kid, you know, you don't know any better. But no, we have wonderful memories, and I think I'm very lucky to have had her as a woman, because she passed on some really important values to me.
Yeah.
And she was my best friend. I would talk to her a lot on the phone, and we have long conversations. And, you know, she understood that I needed my space and freedom, which was not easy for her. But yeah, I think that's why I say beautiful. That's why I use these strong words to describe it, because if you knew her, you would understand where I'm coming from.
What has your mum's passing away changed in your life? Has it changed the way you project yourself in the future? Has it changed your desires or your priorities?
For me, my mom, one thing I wish she was better at was saying no to people. She always gave so much of her time and put people first, sometimes even before her own family. And that's for me a very strong lesson, not to do that, to know your limitations. And it doesn't make you a bad person. You shouldn't feel guilty. And I think that women in general always fight with this. They struggle. They always go out of their way. They always say sorry. They always are too nice. Pleasers. She was a big pleaser. Big people pleaser. And we would argue, because sometimes I felt that if I was not pleasing what she wanted me to please, she would get very disappointed. And I think it's we shouldn't do that to daughters or girls. We need to empower them, because it will affect them in their life. In the workforce, women need to be strong yet gentle, and it's very hard to have both. So I'm trying to learn now to say no better, because I don't want to exhaust myself. And I felt like a lot of the causes of the breast cancer were emotional as well. You know, always never showing when you're upset about something, hiding it inside, and always putting on a smile or wanting to be perfect. And these are all, who cares? It's not important just to teach your child to say please and thank you. It's also important for them to have self-confidence, not just, you know, always know when to smile. You know what I mean?
Have women played a bigger role in your life than men? I mean, the subjects of the pop art images, for instance, that you created a few years ago to put on your clothing line or that you exhibited as framed pictures, which were quite provocative. But these are all women, powerful women.
That's later. Interesting. Yeah, that was a coincidence. So I started the line, the clothing line, because I've always been very commercial in my mindset. I've always been a businesswoman and deep down an entrepreneur by nature. And I'm quite creative. So I remember moving back from France to the Emirates, and one of my best friends moved back from Singapore. And we were very bored and disappointed with the clothes and fashion in Dubai at the time. And you only had either Mango and Zara or Prada and Gucci. And we said, why don't they have niche brands? And that's where we developed a brand called Sugar Vintage. And we introduced it to a very prestigious boutique that was a multi-brand homegrown label called Sauce. And it was like an incubator, you could say, or like a mentor who helped us hone the label and become international. And after 3 years or 4 years, we managed to penetrate markets like Japan and Hong Kong, which was unheard of.
And what made your brand unique compared to others?
The brand was to take elements of the Emirati culture and modernize it into a way where you could wear it every day in a casual manner. But we kept it high end.
Even for foreigners?
Yeah. And it really helped make the culture more pop art-like. So they were these icons that we Arabicized that were very favorable in the female community. When I say favorable, I mean Audrey Hepburn. You think of so much femininity right there. So we took that and we Arabicized it with the golden burqa, the henna.
Yeah, this traditional mask,
yeah,
Emirati
the
mask.
Emirati mask, exactly. And Marilyn Monroe and Queen Elizabeth. And then
it's quite provocative, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is, but it resonated very well. Lots of people copied us after that, by the way. So for me, at the time, we were really making a new movement in the world towards fashion. It didn't exist before. We took the Dehen Oud perfume bottle, we put it as an art piece, and we called it Dehen Oud number 5. You know the little oud?
Yeah.
The perfume bottle? The one they sell in the market? It looks like it's like a little glass. It's got a very specific gold print on it. And these did so well in the GCC community. I remember people used to wear our pieces to London and get asked about it. And it created a huge hype, a huge movement. And these icons that we used to have on T-shirts became our most best sellers. They were called the Turathi pop icons. But Turathi meaning my heritage.
It's quite controversial to put a mask on a very popular female Western sexy figure.
It's true.
Did you want to say with this?
So because of these T-shirts, I was invited to experiment and do that into really beautiful art pieces, all hand embroidered, and they were showcased in the first Abu Dhabi Art Fair in 2011. I managed to meet so many wonderful women in the royal family, and everyone was so welcoming. And we had these 12 pieces that's all sold out. They created such a ruckus. They were beautiful. They cost a lot to make, and they sold for a lot. And I was only left with one piece in the end out of 12. And we had Mona Lisa, we had Beyonce. And the inspiration behind it was to celebrate strong women that we considered beautiful, that left their mark in the universe. When you think about Mona Lisa, Audrey Hepburn, Marilyn Monroe, Beyoncé, they have one thing in common. They're beautiful, they're powerful, and they were not afraid to embrace their femininity and sexuality. For me, the burqa was something women would wear in the past to protect them from the heat. It was reflective, and they used to work in the fields. And then it became a beautiful, what would you say? A mask ladies would wear in public to go out, to hide it or cover a bit their features. And it's very pretty on some women, the way they would wear it with a very light shela. It was part of the tradition. So I was taking something iconic and traditional from my culture and taking something from the global culture that was also seen as iconic and merging them. So it was East meets West. It was not controversial to me, more of me wanting to celebrate two beauties merged into one, you know? Then there was an Emirati scholar, no names mentioned, but she wrote an article 2 years later about a designer that used the culture in the wrong way and puts it on these, Western Hollywood movie stars and how dare she? And nobody took her seriously. Mm-hmm. Why? Because it's not the hijab. It's not the burqa where you cover your face. Mm-hmm. For us, the burqa is a gold mask and it's not religious, it's traditional, mm-hmm. which is very different. So for me, henna, I would not be offended if somebody wore it in a provocative way. It's an embellishment. So is this mask. It's an embellishment. I was embellishing them with my culture to say, welcome, we find you beautiful, and just playing around with that. So it was artistic. It's pop art. I mean, art is always going to provoke people in good ways, I hope.
Now, back to my previous question about the role of women in your life. Have you had more female role models than male ones?
That's an interesting question. Yeah, I would definitely say, given that I'm Emirati and I'm from a conservative culture, women played a huge role in my life. Teachers, my sister was older than me, her friends, my mother, my mother's friends, family members, aunts, neighbors, I would say mentors, even at work, female bosses, all of them helped shape my character and gave me wonderful advice. Whether I was open to the feedback sometimes or not open to the feedback. Male mentors, I didn't have that much exposure to, much less in numbers than the females that shaped.
Even in the professional life?
Yeah, even in the professional life. So I think I'm quite lucky like that.
So you've had more women bosses than...
I have. And women have been always very supportive. Very rarely did I encounter a blockage.
What about your father? And his role in
his role is very important.
The woman you are now,
very very important. So he's a very down to earth, easygoing gentleman, and he's always been very encouraging of women, going after their career or furthering their education. So I'm very lucky like that. He's always been a very generous man, soft nature. Everyone loves him wherever he goes. He's very charismatic. He's like somewhat of a Santa Claus now. And I'm lucky. I'm lucky because he speaks seven languages and he's very well educated and he gets along with every type of character you can imagine.
So he's had higher education in days where not many people could have
True.
Access to...
And he always, always wanted to be a medical doctor. It was his dream. Till today, he doesn't want to stop practicing. It took a long time for him to settle down and have a family. So he got married in his 30s. He had a lot of responsibility. So his father passed away. He had to take care of his younger siblings. And he took all the responsibility on his shoulders, whereas his other brothers maybe not as much. And he was very giving like that. He's very much of a godfather kind of personality. He really wanted to be a doctor at all costs. He wanted to specialize. To become a cardiologist, and he complains that his family responsibilities didn't give him the space to pursue that. So I'm sure it wasn't easy having so much family responsibility plus trying to get an education and make it. But he did very well for himself.
Mm. Now, going back to fashion design, the main clothing item of Emirati women, of course, is the abaya. Has the way women wear the abaya and the way you wear it changed a lot over the years?
For sure. It changed a lot. I mean, before it was about modesty and it was very much just black. And today you just see so much variety, so many cuts and fabrics and even colors. And it's very interesting. We used to make fun and say, who would dare wear a white abaya or colored abaya? You know, it was
white being the color of men.
Yeah. And now you see it everywhere. And it just revolutionized. And I think it came from Saudi, because Saudis are very advanced with abaya fashion because they have to wear it, obviously. So it was really interesting to see over the past 20 years how quickly the abaya revolutionized itself, how much more expensive it got, how much more fashionable. How you have to buy one now for an occasion, and you have the evening abaya and the daytime abaya and the casual abaya and the abaya for work and the short abaya you wear with your flats. It's very interesting.
Another topic that I would like to cover is your other professional life, other career. You have a day job. You're the vice president for corporate communications of a large Abu Dhabi district cooling company. And also the first woman to be on the leadership team of that company. First of all, was it difficult to get to that position? Do people let you do what you need to do? And what are the main challenges?
That's a very good question. So for me, I'm lucky because I've never really pursued or fought for a position or a job. So I was discovered via LinkedIn. And it was really interesting because I was already considering looking elsewhere when I was in my current job because I wanted to change. I was there a long time and I felt like I was, you know, becoming slowly a big fish in a small pond. So I was getting a little restless. I wanted something different. And being in a multinational, an oil and gas multinational in my previous role, it's very hard to contribute a lot of creativity or change. Because they've been doing things for 100 years. You can't just come and change it now. So that was could get sometimes somewhat frustrating. Abu Dhabi came as a complete surprise. It was a wonderful offer, a very challenging position. And I was like, yes, let's do this. And I'm sure it's going to be wonderful. And then at first I learned that it's different. Even though Abu Dhabi is so close to Dubai, there's a different way of doing business. What I like and admire about my company, it's very collective. So it's not a one-man show. And I thought it was. I thought I just get on with my job, present it to my boss, and that was that. Apparently not. I need to share it with the rest of the leadership team, get their feedback and their buy-in. And it was a big learning curve for me because then I understood that the importance of understanding what's the political decision-making process and involving the right people in certain projects and being inclusive, not working in a silo. So that was interesting. And also teaches you a lot about your leadership skills and how you are in a team and, you know, how you create a little bit of social engineering. So you need to create awareness about the change in value you're bringing. Mm. So you kind of work a lot on selling your product or yourself or your personal brand. Then the second thing I think is that in Abu Dhabi, people are very much about keeping their head low, being very low key, getting on with it, and they're very low profile and humble. Whereas in Dubai, I'm used to more of a, you know, we're very pro media, nobody shies away from an interview. Whereas in Abu Dhabi, it's very, very humble and low key and low profile. And I appreciated that because I realized that not everybody wants recognition all the time for everything they're doing. And they don't consider it to be just belonging to them. And a good example is that we had recently some finance awards we were nominated for and we won. And the whole team went to receive the award. Nobody wanted to be there, even though we had some very senior people on the table that night.
Being involved in all these professional activities and passions at the same time, that must be quite a challenge.
You have to prioritize, and unfortunately, I had to give up my my clothing business. So I, in the process of selling that, I couldn't maintain it at the standards I wanted to maintain it. There was no time, and it was both becoming two full-time jobs. Especially when you go international, there's a lot of demand and manufacturing and shipping and, you know, trade shows and traveling and following up with customers and manufacturers. I couldn't keep it up anymore. Maybe one day. But right now, I think it's a good idea that I'm not very much involved in retail and fashion. I just feel the market is not doing that great right now. And everybody is trying to experiment to become a fashion designer of some sort. A lot of our designs were also copied and inspired a lot of designers to start their own brand. So I exited at the right time. I did it for 8 years. I did it really well. I experienced a lot of wonderful opportunities. We took it to new heights that was almost viewed as impossible for an Emirati brand. And I think we put fashion in the map in our own way. Mm. And it's hard because it was my baby, but I don't have time.
Is there something today that you would maybe do differently?
I would have maybe approached more investors to invest in the business. But I noticed after a while the fashion industry is a challenging business because it sucks up a lot of liquidity, a lot. It needs a lot of investment. It needs a lot of patience. It's very cutthroat. It's competitive. It's very hard to get support because you're always needing to please your customer base, whether it's retail boutiques or an individual customer. They always want something new and they always want more, and it's very hard. I mean, I don't regret anything. I just think to myself, if I had a partner and I had children, I would have focused full time on my fashion and left the corporate world. But my career was picking up so much and I was learning so much. It was a golden opportunity. It would have been stupid just to leave that and just focus on fashion. And I use the word stupid because it wasn't a 7-to-2 government job. It was actually a corporate career in oil and gas that was at a multinational level, and they wanted to expose me to certain markets and countries. So I couldn't juggle both. Mm. And then my mother got ill, so I just had to make certain choices. So it's priorities.
So now to our last question. Where do you picture yourself in, say, 5 or 10 years or later?
Art is very close to my heart. My mother was an artist. We have her paintings everywhere. She sold a lot as well. So art has always been part of my life. And for me, that's why letting go of fashion was okay, is because I've always been creative. Whether that creativity comes in the shape of a project or an art project or a fashion project, it's all at the end of the day creativity. How you choose to express it, there's multiple ways. You can even write a book and make it a creative piece of work. You know, it's how you see the world. Sugar Vintage and the fashion line made me realize maybe I'm not a fashion designer, but actually an entrepreneur, which is very different. So I'm okay to start something that does really well and exit at the right time. Art now is taking me on a different path, a different journey. It's unfolding new terrains, because I think art is a wonderful language to get a message across. And for me, art is disguising the philanthropy, because I believe if I had make it only cancer focused, I would have lost a very big audience, which is the male audience. This platform allows me to speak to male, female, children, teenagers, everybody. And I'm very grateful for that. I'm very grateful that I had support, or even moral support, to pull it through. For now, I'm definitely going to be in this role for another minimum 3 years, unless, you know, life or the universe decides to take me on a different path. I would like to be very close to my father, because, you know, he's my only living parent, and I think it's important. I really appreciate quality time. I don't take it for granted, whereas in the past I would have. To have the right support group and friends around me. I'm quite selective now by who I allow in my life, whereas before my friends would choose me, I wouldn't choose them. And I think it's important to choose your friends carefully, because this is your time, and your time is your most precious commodity now. Not money, nothing. Your time and health are very important. The third thing I would say on a personal level, I would like to meet a partner and have a child. So 5 years, I see myself married with a partner and a daughter. I would like to live abroad. I'd like to live in London for a bit. I would like to develop my art skills more. I would like to take this project to more countries. I see it happening in Moscow, in London. I see it happening in Bahrain, in Paris, in New York. So the next target now is Art Dubai and London over this 2018 period. Let's see. I'm trying to find an author to spend enough time with my father to write his personal autobiography. So I'm always up to something. I'm always busy doing more than one thing in the background. But those are what I can guarantee I can see unfolding. But you never know where life can take you.
Okay. Well, I think we can leave it there.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you very much.
Leila El Marashi.
So it's been such a joy, and I feel really honored to be one of your first Emiratis on the show. And I think we're very grateful as Emiratis when we find the international community wanting to give them a platform and appreciate them. It's very nice of you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Natalie.
Thank you for listening to Emirati Stories. If you want to subscribe to the show, you can find it on iTunes or any podcast directory for Android, such as Stitcher. I encourage you also to read the show notes on emiratistories.com, where you will find lots of pictures of Leila and her projects. I look forward to presenting another guest in the next episode next month. In a few seconds, you will be able to hear the full version of the song that was played earlier. It's called Living Without You by Dachshund Sigmund. Thanks again and goodbye.
I still want your push and I want your shove. All wrapped up in the skin of love. Reaching out to adore the sun. Old story, story rerun. Fear the old man till he lost his mind. Slow slide out is its own unkind. So she sits in a chair to the dead of night. She won't drink or move cause it don't feel right. I said living without you would hurt me, but it doesn't feel like anything at all. They said living without you would hurt me, but it doesn't feel like anything at all. They said living without you would hurt me, but it doesn't feel like anything at all. And they said living without you would hurt me, but it doesn't feel like anything at all. They said living without you would hurt me, but it doesn't feel like